Okay, so we're coming to the end of the year, 2018, and lots of changes. Seems like it's been a while since I've given a talk. And whenever I give a talk, it always seems like it's the first time. Like, what am I going to say? How's it going to be? How's it going to go? I was visiting my parents, the Big Island of Hawaii, and then came back and preparing for winter retreat. Although it can't have been that long ago that I gave my last talk, but it's all kind of a blur. And I was quite sad to hear of the death of Venerable Sudiko's father, Adam. I was hoping to see him again. He came here a few years ago. And we went for a walk. A few of us were clearing a new trail up to our Chetty site. And I remember the comment he made when we went up there, and the trail wasn't at all finished. It was only went up a couple hundred feet or so from the loop trail up the mountain. And I remember going up there and just the three of us, myself, Tan Sudiko, who was then Anagarika Armand, and his father Adam. And we were just sitting there in the under the manzanitas up at the end of the trail, just sitting in the forest. And it's a really nice day, a really beautiful day. And I remember he made, Tan Sudiko's father made the comment, "This is the most fun I've had in years." And just really good memory. It's just really nice. And so I do feel happy though. I have mudita for him because he was very, very generous with both his family and with the Sangha before he passed away. So he may not even realize the great fruits that type of generosity can bear. So, been thinking about different possible themes for the winter retreat and trying to reconnect with the suttas. And so as the year comes to an end and some of us are inevitably going to be thinking about New Year's resolutions, Aditana, what to resolve for the next year, for the coming year. And I can put in a plug for, and this is coming from experience, not to make foolhardy aditanas, or just to keep them realistic, know our limits, know what's sustainable for us, know what we can do. So I remember first coming here and having a strong aditana to get enlightened as quickly as possible, and then realizing that that wasn't a very realistic determination after a few years of being here, and then the determinations became more like, okay, well maybe for this period of time I can try to maybe not be a jerk. I can do. Maybe I can try to do that, and then I'll feel like I've accomplished something if I have more goodwill. So there's a set. There's these. There's in the suttas. There's many sets of dhammas. When we have a set of certain teachings, like a graduated set, we call that like dhammas with a small d. When we say dhamma with capital D, that's like the teaching of the Buddha. But we have different dhammas. For example, the Bojanga dhammas, which we chanted this evening, would be the seven factors of awakening. Or you have things like the You have like the Apanika Dhammas, that's another one that comes to mind. It's like the three Dhammas that are never wrong. So that's the eating little, sleeping little, speaking little. It's the Apanika Dhammas. Thought I would try to talk a little bit about a set that I was looking through, Tanjokun Payuto's Buddha Dhamma, this big, very big book, goes through the whole of the Buddha's teaching in a very systematic way, and it's quite a wonderful book, not just a wonderful reference, but also a book that's worth reading cover to cover. And looking up a set known as the Saparisa Dhammas. And these are the dhammas related to being a great person or a virtuous person. And it's a very interesting set of Pali terms. And I remember memorizing these when doing the Nuktam exams in Thailand. This is one of my favorite sets to memorize, so I'm trying to refresh my memory here. It's it's a set of seven, so it's Dhammanyuta, Atanyuta, Atanyuta, Matanyuta, Kalanyuta, Parisanyuta, Pugalanyuta. These are the Saparisa Dhammas. So, Dhammanyuta, this is Dhamma in terms of nature. So it's like, this could be translated as knowing the nature, or knowing the state of things, knowing your situation. Dhammanyuta. And there's so many teachings around this. We have the Kruba Ajahn's talking a lot about just knowing the true nature of things. And even the word for nature in Thai is tamachat, which is the word tamma with chat, which can be like state. So Dhamma in the Thai language has this connotation of nature already, so knowing the nature of things, but also knowing things in the present, knowing the state of our own body and mind in the present, knowing the state of our external surroundings in the present. This goes part and parcel with sati, with mindfulness. And thinking about Dhammanyuta, or knowing the nature, this is also just points back to that mindfulness is such a important and integral part of what we're doing here in the monastery. So it's the whole practice can be like just a practice of mindfulness, and how indispensable, how important mindfulness is for us as practitioners. Like Longpo Cha would say, when you go to sleep, you go to sleep with mindfulness. When you wake up, establish mindfulness as quickly as possible. One way we can do this is with Buddho, just mentally reciting Buddho. And it doesn't even have to be in conjunction with the breath or even in a formal meditation session. But then Buddho can be a very helpful way to establish mindfulness as soon as we wake up. So if we're going into the winter retreat and trying to develop some sort of consistent, continual mindfulness, then trying to have Buddho in mind upon falling asleep and then waking up, trying to establish Buddho immediately. I know for myself, if I don't do that, I tend to just get into the old mental ruts, slightly depressed, slightly negative. But then if I can establish Buddho as quickly as possible, then the mind gets a little bit brighter right away. Or maybe there's been some sort of deluded or crazy dream, and it's kind of like waking up in a sort of muddled state. But if I can come back, if I can establish Buddho and just push that aside and try to get clear as soon as possible, that's incredibly helpful. And then it's like taking a few deep breaths. Okay, where am I at? And so it's just knowing the body and the mind in the present. Atanyuta. So the second Saparisa Dhamma is Atanyuta, and the third is Atanyuta. So the difference between those is the second is Atta, A-T-T-H-A, and the third is just A-T-T-A. So Atanyuta, the second one, that's Atta meaning goal or spiritual aim. That could be a translation for that. So it's translated as knowing the goal or knowing one's purpose, knowing one's aim. So this is helpful in terms of just knowing which direction we want to be going. And then if we know what our goal is, and it doesn't, of course, the ultimate goal is Nibbana, but we may have simpler goals like having more goodwill or working against a certain defilement or obstruction in the mind, or working to better ourselves in some way. So knowing what our goal is or what our immediate aim is, and just by knowing that, then our actions are going to be, say, whatever our actions are of body, speech, or mind, those are going to be in line with or in suit with our purpose, our aim, what our goal is. So that's Atanyuta, that's knowing our aim, knowing our purpose. So, for example, if our aim is to be mindful, then everything we do, we'll want to do what we can to be more mindful. For example, using Buddho or finding a way that's helpful for us where we can focus on the breath and practice Anapanasati in a way that helps us to be more mindful. And also, I think that when we talk about knowing our purpose or knowing the goal, then having some sort of intellectual understanding of what our goal is, but also acknowledging that we haven't experienced it yet, so being very open in terms of what that experience might be. So for example, if we want samadhi, then, or we want sama samadhi, and I hate to use this word, but we say we want jhana, then we have to be open to the idea that we don't know what it is, so we have to be careful about mentally creating an experience and calling it something. That's different than being very open and being open to a new experience of something. Or, in the ultimate sense, Nibbana, having never experienced it, we don't know what it is. But the Buddha praised having a very firm intellectual understanding of it, so that we know we can be moving in the right direction. But then we also have to be very, very open, because we don't actually know yet what that experience is, I don't even want to say what that'll be like, because that doesn't apply with Nibbana, but yeah, just to be very open to these things. We just want to be very careful to, with that openness, we may have something that can trip us up in meditation practice, in formal practice, or in practice in general, is if we have a peaceful experience, and this is a really common thing for meditators, for monks, for practitioners, super common. We might have a really peaceful experience, and then we spend the next 10 years trying to get back to it. So I've talked to many people where this has happened, where both lay people and monastics, where they've had a really, really profound, deep meditation experience and then can't get back to it. And so this is invariably because we're trying to mentally recreate it, whereas the experience, what it first came from, was a temporary letting go of desire, letting go of an expectation for an experience. It came from that openness. Because we were very open, we were able to experience what we experienced. And because it was profound, it can't be recreated by an act of will. So it can take years then to get to that point of giving up again and experiencing that again. Because it comes from giving up, it comes from relinquishing, comes from surrendering, comes from not trying to mentally create some sort of samadhi or letting go experience, but from the actual letting go. So atanyuta, that's knowing our aim, knowing our purpose, knowing what steps we need to take to get there. Atanyuta, this is the knowing oneself, knowing one's own limitations, knowing one's abilities, and then working from where one is at. So this is interesting, because this is a quality of a great person, knowing where one is at, so we don't overestimate ourselves or have some incredibly idealistic view of ourselves, but just knowing our limitations, knowing our drawbacks, knowing where we're at, knowing what we're struggling with. And this also doesn't really imply comparing ourselves to other people, because everybody's going to be where they're at. Everybody's going to have a different level of barami. And we just have to know where we're at, because that's such a barami. That's being honest, having integrity. And wherever we're at in comparison to somebody else, we can't just be somebody else. So we just have to work from there. Everybody has different talents, different abilities. So even if we're someone who, say for myself, like I might be envious of someone who has a lot of metta, so be like, oh, I wish, oh, I'll never be like that. I'll never be able to be like that. So then comparing myself to them, and then I have to think, well, okay, that's just where I'm at. I have to work from there. So what can I do where I'm at? Well, okay, maybe my metta isn't that at that level, but I can have mudita, I can have a sense of rejoicing or appreciation for someone who has that level of metta. So that's something I can do from where I'm at, but I can't suddenly make my metta barami go up higher. That's something that other person cultivated for a really long time, probably. So we just have to, that comes back to the previous one too, atanyuta. If we want to cultivate something like metta, okay, we'll make that goal, but this is where I'm at. So these things, these different dhammas, they work together. Or the way we get affected by different things, like praise and criticism. It's like, okay, if I get praised, I get affected this way. If I get criticized, I get affected that way. That's just where I'm at. Then it can question, okay, well, why is that? Can investigate, contemplate, reflect. Why are these things happening this way? You know, based on where I'm at. Then we have matanyuta. This is knowing the right measure, knowing the proper measure. With eating and sleeping, but also with our speaking, with our interacting, knowing the right measure. Knowing the right measure at the meal. So it's kind of interesting to me that these very basic things are qualities of a great person. Like a great person knows the right measure. They know how much to eat. They know how much to sleep. Know how much to speak. So like the right measure at the meal, this is something that when we come into a period of winter retreat, we can get focused on this and try to really investigate ourselves, what's the right measure. Or like Ajahn Chah would reflect that one of his teachers, Lungpur Khinri, would always say, like, podi with everything. Everything has to be podi. Not too little, not too much, but just right, just the right amount for Dhamma, for the Dhamma practice, for mindfulness, clear comprehension, sati sampajanya. So like with bhojane matanyuta, that's the knowing the right measure with the food. One way that Ajahn Chah would teach it, and it comes from the Visuddhimagga, it's that to eat until you think you need about 5 more mouthfuls to be full, and then drink water or whatever liquid you're drinking until you're full. And that's a good way to both have energy, not too much drowsiness, not too much sloth and torpor after the meal, and also to not have pain after the meal, not get a stomach ache. So that's like a example of padi, if just right. And then with sleep, this is always something I would ask different ajahns, like how much to sleep, what's the right amount. And it's because if I admit where I'm at personally, I am prone to laziness. If I don't have something I'm actively doing, then I'll tend to sleep a little bit too much. So this is something I would always ask. I remember when Lungpa Plien was here in 2007, he stayed for 2 weeks, and we got to have some really good Q&A sessions with him. And actually, I wasn't asking this particular question because I was doing this, but I was just kind of curious about it. So the question I asked him was, if you're a bhikkhu and you're keeping all the precepts, but you don't meditate at all and you only sleep all day, would you still benefit from being a monk? So like if you just came down for the meal, ate, and then went to sleep and just slept all the time, would you still benefit somehow? And he said, well, you're keeping the precepts, so that's good, but if you sleep all the time, you're not going to make progress, and you'll probably end up degenerating in some way. And so then he told me, don't sleep too much. But I took away from that too, that if you were to sleep that much, you probably would have a really hard time keeping the precepts. Eventually they would be compromised somehow. You get into this kind of muddled state where the mindfulness would be so low that you would end up breaking precepts. So these things are all connected. But then another time I remember asking Lungpa Liam, like, how much sleep is appropriate, and he said something like, well, if you're from the age of 20 to 40, 6 hours a night, 40 to 60, 5 hours a night, over 60, 4 hours a night. And then he said, but if you don't differentiate between a day and a night, and you're able to do like in the suttas, like make a night into a day and a day into a night, then you don't need to sleep at all. So that was his answer to that question, which I thought was also curious because I didn't know that he would prescribe less sleep if you're older. But I guess it's up to the individual. Everybody has to know what's right for themselves. There's also, then we have kalanyuta, which is knowing the proper time. So knowing the right time to speak, right time to stay silent, right time to do work, right time to be at the kuti, right time to rest, right time to be putting forth effort. So that's kalanyuta. There's this word in Thai, kaladesa, which the Krupa Ajahns like to say, which is like knowing time and place. So there's certain things that are good, but they're not good all the time. They're good if they're at the right time. So knowing the time, say if we need to speak with someone about some deficiency in their conduct, then finding the right time, not just blurting it out in front of a group of people, but finding the right time, you're alone, checking in, how's the mood? So this is like an art, like knowing the right time. Or like winter retreat, this is the right time for meditation, for striving. It's not a time of work, so we're setting down work projects. It's a time for going inward. Then there's this interesting one, it's parisanyuta, which is knowing the society. This is knowing the society. So knowing cultural norms, like just because we're in the Sangha doesn't mean we don't follow cultural norms. So knowing how to greet, knowing how to say hello, knowing how to say goodbye. This is interesting to me that the Buddha would talk about this. And knowing what kind of things are appropriate to talk about with people, knowing what kind of things are not appropriate to talk about with people in any given society. So particularly the society we live in. So knowing what's appropriate to bring up, what's not going to create bad feelings, and so on. Then the last one is pugalanyuta, which means knowing persons and specifically knowing who to associate with. So, and not just knowing who to associate with, but knowing what the right conduct with different types of people will be. So like, for example, if a guest comes to the monastery, if they're a first-time guest, we might treat them in one way. If they're a guest who's been coming for years, we might treat them another way because we know them. Or if it's a junior monk coming to visit here, we'll treat them one way. But if it's a senior monk coming, we'll treat them another way. We'll give them a better kuti. We'll give them more honor, respect. So we wouldn't have pugalanyuta, say, if we were to treat a first-time guest like as if they were like a senior monk arriving or something, like give them all sorts of honor and respect. That wouldn't be right according to the proper way of relating to people. Or conversely, say if Lungpur Pasano was to arrive and we just didn't give him the honors and the respect of a senior monk, abbot of the monastery, then that wouldn't be correct. We wouldn't have that particular quality if we weren't to give him the proper honor and respect that is accorded to him for who he is, for his standing in the Sangha, etc. So these seven Saparisa Dhammas, the Dhammas of a virtuous person, they're just helpful to think about in terms of as we're going into a time of heightened self-cultivation, the Dhammanyuta, knowing our surroundings, knowing the nature, that's Attanyuta, knowing the goal, knowing the purpose, Attanyuta, knowing ourselves, Matanyuta, knowing the measure, eating, sleeping, speaking, etc. Kalanyuta, knowing the right timing, proper time, Parisanyuta, knowing the society, Pugalanyuta, knowing the people. And when these things come together, then we could be considered great people or virtuous people. And one reason I really like this set of Dhammas too is that what whoever you are, you can actually have them. And it just takes a bit of a shift in focus, a little bit of a shift in our habits. It's they're not so high that we can't embody these things or attain these things. And so it's helpful to hear about them, helpful to study them, and then that way we can internalize them, make them our own, and really take delight in this kind of self-cultivation that we're doing here. So 2018, we've all done a tremendous amount of work this year. We've had, it's hard to remember all the things that have happened. And one is just having our grand opening ceremony for this new hall here. But other than that, we've had so much forestry work done this year and just... everybody's, I have to say, anumodana to everybody, the monastic community and the lay community, because we've just done so much work, and I feel like being able to go into a retreat soon, we'll formally enter the retreat on January 5th, which is the Upasita day, and then have a full schedule on January 7th, so we've still got some time, but I've certainly been thinking about this, looking forward to it. And also to say anumodana to the retreat crew has arrived. Everybody except Nit, I think, is not here yet. And so grateful that we're all going to get this opportunity to deepen our practice, think about things like the Saparisa Dhammas, but also any other sati dhammas, mindfulness dhammas we might feel like we want to cultivate, getting more in touch with buddho. So anyway, I'm feeling like this is a very good time, precious time, and I'll just leave it at that.
I believe